Support for Strange Fruit comes from Caperton Realty, a locally owned and operated real estate company committed to helping clients find their ideal home in Louisville and surrounding areas. Families and homes, each designed differently. Realtors and listings at CapertonRealty.com.
Hi, I'm Kyla.
And this is Jay.
And you're listening to Strange Fruit by WFPL.
Welcome back to listeners. So, Doc, the airlines seemingly have been all over the news lately.
They're getting bugged.
If it ain't a window being blown out.
The airlines are getting bugged.
If it ain't a wing breaking off.
Overcharging folks for bags.
And listen, but, you know, the main story, Doc, was right here. The doctor from Louisville, Kentucky, who the Asian-American doctor who was dragged and beaten and bloodied over that flight, right? And so that was sort of like the start of it. But it seems almost like every single month there's something buck going on with an airline, something egregious, whether it has something to do with the plane falling apart. But the most, you know, to me, the most egregious offenses come towards people of color, right? And especially, you know, people who are fat, who are big, like trying to navigate what it's like to travel when you have to be in such intimate quarters with somebody, right, who may or may not like you, right? People don't like you because you're a man, because you're a woman, because you're black, because you get, like, it's just so much. And so what does that mean when that leads to police interactions, or what does that mean when it leads to the flight attendant somehow punishing you because somebody don't like you, right?
Right, exactly.
So, there was a case recently of podcast co-host and feminist writer Amber J. Phillips was recently catching a flight. Amber was flying a pretty short flight from North Carolina to D.C. when she got into a bit of a kerfuffle, I guess, with her white female seatmate. So let's hear directly from Amber herself. Listeners, please welcome to the show writer Amber J. Phillips. How are you?
Yay! Hi, I'm good. How are y'all doing?
I'm good. And so I'm not even going to try Amber to describe, because again, it sounds nonsensical when I say it, but please describe to our listeners in your own words what happened on that flight, because you were kind of like, you were tweeting about it, right? About what happened to you in relation to this passenger beside you.
Yeah, so folks might have seen this on Twitter, or which I was surprised about how many people saw themselves in this story and how far it's gone, because it was me practicing what I believe about myself and what I believe about all Black people, is that we deserve to be in any space that we find ourselves in. So it almost feels like yesterday, because it has been such a hard experience for me and has brought up so many conversations that I've had before I ever took that flight. But it's just interesting to see how quickly white supremacy will move on you when you least expect it. But basically what happened, I think it was about a week ago now, on a Thursday night, in addition to writing and hosting the Black Joy, co-hosting the Black Joy mixtape, I also train people in digital organizing with all these progressive causes. So I literally live this life of being an organizer, being a trainer, of being someone who is actively trying to build the world that I want to live in, because I know that I deserve it. So basically last week I was on a flight, a very quick flight from Durham, Raleigh, North Carolina to DCA. And mind you, I travel all across the country all the time. And this was one of those planes of folks who travel a lot. One of those planes that's, my mom calls them a puddle jumper, where, you know, if you fly a lot, you are unfortunately going to be on a small plane sometimes when you're flying regionally. And it was one of those planes that was so small that literally everybody has to, regardless of what size your carry-on, like, even if you have a regular size carry-on bag, you have to, like, have it checked at the gate. Yeah. I know this story is also so interesting because a lot of Black people don't get the opportunity to travel as much as I do. And I want them to know that you deserve, one, to see the world, and then, two, to be treated with some respect when you do. So it was one of those small flights. You have to check your bag. But when I got on the plane, I said in my there was actually a woman who was – I had a window seat, and the woman who was in the aisle seat actually ended up being in the wrong seat. And this is when I had this interaction with this woman that – now, this story is about, who basically sits down and am I allowed to cuss on here?
Go ahead. Yeah. We'll beep it out if it's not allowed, but go for it. Yeah. Yes, be real, yes.
Because I get real comfortable. But, who just acted very mean and nasty. And, this is something that I kind of have until this moment. I can be honest that I've had a very deep cognitive dissonance around because, one, in the world that I occupy, a lot of people have bodies like mine. In fact, 67% of women in this country are over a size 12. And I believe I'm a great person to sit next to. But when she sat down in the flight, she was just actively, I describe it as a kid who sits down to another kid and starts bullying him, like, I'm not touching you, you're touching me type of thing. You've seen that probably happen before.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
If you have siblings, you've done that, where it's an aggressive flag that you don't want me next to you. Yeah, my arm is touching you. This is a small flight. It's actually under an hour long flight. And lots of people think that when you buy a plane ticket, that somehow this is like purchasing an apartment and you're paying for square feet. You are not.
Yeah.
You are not. Everyone hates flying. Mm-hmm. Flying sucks for a majority of people. When I went back and looked at this story, like, airlines are ranking very low in customer satisfaction because of the greed of these airlines with stuffing people on these flights. And American Airlines is one of those airlines. So on this small plane that you can't check a bag, but somehow there's 65 seats on this, my arm was touching this woman. And I think it's important to mention for folks who go back and look at the Twitter thread that I was like very black that day. I was wearing a shirt that said "Got Melanin." I had on, yes, like, I had just got my locks done. They were up and I'm one of the only black people on this flight. So when we talk about how do you know this is about race? One, I've lived in a black body for 28 years. I'm pretty clear at this point. And then two, she just aggressively let me know that she didn't want me sitting next to her. At one point asking, could I move over, even though she was in the aisle seat. And we went the whole flight like this. This was all the aggression from her. Was all before takeoff, right? Mm. So we flew where we needed to go. I was buckled in. I have the armrest down. I was doing what I was supposed to do. And again, y'all, like, I need people to see themselves in me regardless of who you are, because one, what I know about perception, what I know about bias, is that people will use any reason to remove you from a space that they don't think you belong in. Mm. And my arm touching hers was, one, an act of her trying to humiliate me and embarrass me. And I refused to participate because, again, like, I deserve to be here. And I told her squarely, you're being very mean. You're being very nasty to me right now, and I don't appreciate it. And as she kept talking around this, I was like, you don't even have to say anything else. You could just not be mean and nasty to me. Yeah. So all this happened before the flight took off, and I was sitting there and I was just thinking about how awful it felt, how awful I felt, how I believe that there are other people who have had experiences like this and how I didn't deserve it, fat or otherwise. And because my arm was touching her, she just treated me like I wasn't a human. So when we landed, after she's like aggressively putting my arm, you know how, like pushing her hair behind her ear, exactly, like just being a real, yeah, white woman about,
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And just to be honest with you, and I think that's important to mention, like, I need you to know my race and I need you to know hers, because I think sometimes white people try to separate themselves from these things, but like y'all all kind of, I mean, even black folks, I've seen how our size privilege and fat phobia has come up in this conversation.
Yeah.
But long story short, we went the whole entire flight, right? We landed, and as I was sitting there, I was very upset about what had happened to me, and I was, you know, running in my mind about how I was going to report this to American Airlines. And I was like, you know, the use of cell phone cameras have been so important to black people these last, yes, couple years.
Yep.
Because white people will lie.
Yeah.
And they are completely fine with treating you as less than human until you decide that you're going to tell on them. And that's essentially what happened at the end of that flight. Is I was like, you know what? I'm documenting how we're sitting in the chair, because when we landed, she put up her tray table and she sits back and she's able to comfortably sit back without touching me. And that's when I knew, like, I definitely knew then that I didn't deserve to be treated how I was treated. And then the pilot announces that we were actually 25 minutes early. So this woman acted a complete ass on a 30-minute flight, which is the same amount of time that most people ride crowded buses on their way into work. Mm-hmm. And when you know, when you pay to get on a bus, you're not paying for nobody to touch you. So at that moment, I had recorded the video that you all see, and I'm just like saying out loud, but like just softly, I'm like, wow, you didn't even have to treat me like that. You have no idea who I am. You have no idea the people who love me and care about me. And this is how you acted. So as we were getting off the plane, you can just tell, even in the video, you can tell she's just like hiding her face. And like now she's embarrassed, even though she literally spent the beginning of this flight trying to really embarrass me. And I get off. I'm walking behind her. We're getting off the plane and I hear her go to one of the flight attendants. She's harassing me. And I was like, no, I'm not. This woman was terribly mean to me this entire flight. And mind you, no flight attendants were called during the flight. None of that happened, right? So the idea that this person felt that she was in danger is just really interesting to me. So we get off the flight. We're 25 minutes early because our gate isn't ready. And I get off. I grab my bag off the valet, get on the shuttle in order to get to where I'm going. And I realize that she's not coming off the plane. And I realize she's not coming off the plane. She was one of the last people to board. And I think it's important to mention that, like, American Airlines will say, they're literally lying to the media saying that they escorted us both. They were called to escort passengers off the plane when that wasn't the reality. I was on the shuttle bus about to go home. I was actually taken off of that bus off of the fake tears and the lie that I had somehow harassed or assaulted this woman. So long story short, I get on the shuttle bus. She finally comes off with the white female flight attendant, and they're talking outside of the shuttle bus. And then the woman points me out and the flight attendant comes up to me again. Like, if there's an assault happening, wouldn't I be actively participating in that in this moment? I wasn't. I was on the bus about to go home. She comes and she says, get off the bus. And I just ask her why. And she's like, I'm calling the cops. I'm calling security. This bus isn't moving. And I'm just like, wow, like, here we go. Like, this woman, what did you want to happen to me is a question that I have. When we think about the fact that, like, I'm a child who grew up in this over-policed 9/11 state where literally black folks, we are not allowed to show any kind of emotion in an airport outside of complacency in order to get from point A to point B because of the fear white people have around us, right? And this woman called the cops on me at an airport. Like, what? And lied and said that I assaulted her. Yeah. So now I'm face to face with a police officer who also believes this lie. Nobody at any point asked me what happened. Nobody at any point thought that maybe that I deserved to tell them what this story actually was until, like I said in the tweet thread and in all these interviews, is that until the black women showed up. Yeah. And I'm really deeply grateful that I was actually flying into DCA in a place where there's lots of people of color working who had, I think we're now black folks are really hyper aware and hypersensitive in this country, that we'll at least stand around and watch. We'll make sure somebody makes it home. Yeah. And that's essentially what happened that day. All because, and why I'm talking about fat phobia and blackness in the same space is because we have to reckon with the fact that the size of black people's bodies was also used to justify enslavement. It's yes. also used mm-hmm. to justify discrimination. Before the police officer Darren Wilson shot and killed Mike Brown, he referred to him as the Hulk. So even mm-hmm. some of you might look at me and see your mother or your grandmother or your girlfriend and my body type, right? That depending on how white people feel, they find it as a threat no matter what. And I want those two things to be held in dignity, because when we separate them out, when we don't have a conversation about all of those biases and how they can potentially lead to people like me having dangerous interactions with the police, we don't get as close to justice as we should. And again, folks are starting to notice that, oh, she's an activist, she's an organizer. Yeah, and I do normal things like fly and eat at restaurants and exist in public, and that didn't protect me at all.
Yeah.
I can lay out my resume for this person or tell her that I have a degree in African-American studies, so I know that you're being racist. Like, if anything, that would put me in more danger and more trouble, because I was literally acting in a way that I believe that my life is valuable. I believe that I should be on this plane just as much as you are. This sucks for all of us that this plane is so small. Mm. So, yeah.
I tell you what, Amber, you have preached the word. Listen, let me tell you something. You have really preached the word. And you know, and there are a lot of things that we talk about on this show that we try to make light of or find humor in. But I tell you what, just listening, we've talked about similar situations over the last 5 years. But hearing you talk about things that Kyle and I have experienced, about things that our family members have experienced, I tell you what, it just,
right.
You know,
yeah, I mean,
I'm sorry this happened. Number one, I'm sorry this happened to you. You know, not that it was my fault, but I tell you what, as somebody who's been there, as someone who's had my own embodiment vilified, and you know, like we've all been there, right? So, like, number one, like we feel you as Black people, we feel you, right? I don't know, Doc.
Think that, you know, I hate that this happened to you. I hate that just in the midst of you living your life and traveling to where you need to go, that you had to deal with this type of mess, this type of racist.
Right.
Racist, scrutinizing, awful, you know, white racists are discussing, and her behavior, this passenger, as well as American Airlines, and their behavior and their response to you is deplorable and dehumanizing and disgusting. I mean, the fact that one, American Airlines isn't taking accountability, saying like, oh, we supposed to call the police when passengers request it. It's like, no, what you're supposed to do is use deductive reasoning like every human being is capable of doing, and assessing a situation. You're not, there's not an automatic go-to to call any law enforcement at any business at any point in time. It's always,
because if that's the case, so many Black people are going to be in danger.
Exactly.
Black people are calling the cops based on feeling uncomfortable, y'all.
Right.
Like, we just did an entire episode that aired last week. We did an entire episode about the ways in which white people call the cops. Or there were three children shopping for prom outfits, Doc. Mm-hmm. There were two people trying to buy a money order to pay their rent. And all these times, Black people were doing existing while Black, buying money orders, shopping for gowns, you know, going to the grocery store, because white people are uncomfortable because they don't know who you are. It's so absurd. Right. But I want to ask you both.
But I think it speaks to also Amber's point, in the sense that, again, it's not necessarily that they don't even know who you are. It's also they don't think you deserve to be there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask about the notion of space, right? And someone talked on social media about, like, even for me, if I'm walking on the sidewalk, right, and I'm on the right side, while somebody white is walking towards me, they're not going to move, right? It's going to be a game of chicken, right? Or, you know, or if you're in an elevator, like the notion of personal space, to me, that doesn't exist to white people. So what do you all make of the notion of space as it relates to whiteness? Either, number one, you not belonging in their space, or them being inattentive to the way in which they even take up space. What do you all make of the way in which space plays into a lot of these issues?
Yeah, so I live in, as you all know, I live in Washington, D.C. And one thing that we gotta, why this, one, I'm grateful that we're moving of not only talking about police violence, but talking about why the police are showing up. Because had I been upset, had I been angry, like, I now could potentially, my life is in a whole different type of danger based on how I interact with this police officer. And it's important to note that when I did speak to the police officer, he snatched my ID out of my hand. Mm. And that deserves a response, right? Like, I deserve to be like, what the hell? You know, like, why are you treating me this way? But that can also get me thrown on the ground or into police custody. Mm-hmm. So we need to talk about interrogating white people's bias and where their fear is coming from, and why they feel so justified to treat the police as if they're calling for a manager for a refund. Mm-hmm. Like, the police are not your conflict resolution solvers, okay?
Yeah.
Like, that's not what they're literally there for. And if you are using the police in that way, I can only assume that you want me dead. I can only assume that, because you know I didn't assault you. And your word means so much more than mine. And I think the issue of space is so real because when we talk about gentrification, when we talk about who's being moved out of neighborhoods, it's the idea that Black people, people of color, white people don't want us taking up the same space as them. Mm-hmm. This whole thing was again, I not only am taking up space that I had, you know, if you don't want to touch other people, then you might want to considering stepping your coins up to five private, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think space is important to talk about. My friend Jasmine, who I was texting before takeoff and who's the co-host with me on the Black Joy mixtape, is still very much in white people's present history that, like, they believe Black people, like, owe them a bowed head when they walk past. Like, that's in their ancestral bloodline, that Black people just become smaller when they're around. Mm-hmm. Or become more respectful of them and what they need when they're around. And that's what this woman was practicing. Like, that's also a form of, like, white supremacy, okay? So I think this idea of space is important to mention because, it's kind of like, you know, they're treating the police as, like, people who are to show up and I have to run my papers now.
Yeah.
Like, this is, we need to be honest about the fact that, like, Black people are still living in kind of, like, an apartheid state here in the U.S., especially since Trump has been elected. Like, we are under so much threat all the time based on whether or not people feel comfortable around us, or if they believe that car is yours, if they believe those Mentos are affordable to you, like... Oh. All these things are happening at the same time. And that's why I need Black people who care about this issue, who care about police brutality, to also think about the ways that our physical bodies are a threat to white supremacy and white folks and how they're treating us.
No,
like, this is absurd. Like, I had a whole interaction with the police because I existed on a Thursday on a flight.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I completely agree with you. Both of us do. And we feel those situations in which us waking up in the morning, going to work, going to see loved ones, you know, traveling, that we have to navigate all of this mess, you know, and everyone and folks, onlookers, not even having sympathy or empathy for us navigating, feeling like, yeah, it's your duty to address the fact that you're in the space. And we feel like you shouldn't be in the space.
And all you have to do is just show your ID and it'll be resolved. If you really don't do anything wrong, all you have to do is tell the cops that and somehow it'll all be
resolved. Let's talk about the fact that I was deplaning.
Off the plane, child.
You
off
know
the plane.
You know how much security I've already gone through?
Yeah.
You know how many people have checked my identity up until this point?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it really is absurd. So just as we begin to wrap up, what has been the official response of the airlines? Have you been contacted? Have they made any kind of amends? Have you heard from the woman herself?
Absolutely not.
Nothing
Absolutely
at all, really.
Not.
Wow.
Wow.
It's one of those things where, like, American Airlines is providing comment, but they're not. And I think what's also happening that, you know, I've been having conversations about this issue for quite some time. You all mentioned I'm a writer. I write about massage noir. I write about how Black women are specifically treated in our society and the intersections of that when it comes to race and politics. And the thing that's also really hurtful for me right now is who deserves our attention and our action and who doesn't. You know, when I think about the Waffle House is doubling down on believing that woman was guilty. American Airlines is doubling down. Starbucks, no, you know, but we also, that's a different victim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, there's been no official word. I think what happens a lot is that we try to move folks like me and specifically Black women who experience this combination of racism and sexism and fatphobia of, like, oh, we're going to quietly try and speak to you about what to do when this is an overall problem with your airlines. I am not the first story like this, right? Like, the NAACP is collecting stories like mine. So I think it's deplorable that I haven't heard anything from American Airlines. I think it's deplorable that their response is, we just have to call the cops. without any kind of interrogation or without going back to this flight attendant and saying, do you know how you put this customer in danger? What about my safety? And yeah, so that's where we are now. And someone asked me an interesting question about like, what are you starting a movement or what have you? I'm already a part of a movement. I'm a reproductive justice advocate. I believe that in bodily autonomy, working with folks like Sister Song, and I sit on the board of this organization. The Black Joy Mixtape is a biweekly show that like literally every week we're educated on why we need to treat Black women with respect and what that looks like and how to do it and how to talk about it. So this work is ongoing, and I ask that people really interrogate moving forward, like white people, one, stop calling the cops on people who make you feel uncomfortable. Like, call the cops if somebody's hurt. Call like, not because the music is loud down the street, you know? Mm-hmm. So, one, that has to happen. And then, two, I really want all of us to interrogate our biases, how it's showing up and how we talk, the conversations when your homie is speaking very badly about fat Black women or about Black women in general. Like, I want you to interrogate that, because those ideas and the fact that I'm not represented in movies and TVs as much as varying as the bodies of Black people are, sets me up for this experience. And if I can say anything to anybody, it's about like, interrogate your biases and fight for these people. Say something when something is wrong. Say something. Not only don't call the police, but also when you see a terrible situation like this, the word of just one additional white person would have helped me.
Very much so.
One person. And the only person who did step in was a worker on the airport at the airport who essentially is putting her job on the line. So I want people to be, if we're talking about communities, if we're talking about supporting each other and all of us are in this together, like this isn't just some abstract idea that racism exists. It's happening all the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, Amber, we know that this is not an isolated incident. And I tell you what, if nobody else got your back, child, we here at Strange Crew have got your back.
Yes. And please, you know, please keep us informed.
Abreast of what's going on. Yeah. And I tell you what, we appreciate your passion. You know, really, you know, like, I hopefully there are listeners, you know, and our listenership is really diverse. You know, we have a lot of white people. So hopefully, you know, if you ain't buying it from me and Kyla, if you ain't buying it from us, child, you've heard firsthand from someone who's experienced, you know, and so, you know, I have no doubt that from your story, someone's going to learn something. And so we just really appreciate you taking the time to be with us on our little old podcast, Amber. We wish you the best.
I'm
and with
so
it. Please
glad.
Keep in touch. Please keep in touch.
Thank you. Thank you all so much for having me and for having this conversation. I appreciate you.
Absolutely.
And the work that you're doing.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. All right. So thanks to Amber J. Phillips. That was a really impassioned and informative and emotional interview. I'm glad that she chose to share with us and our listeners. I'm really glad. And
I'm
hopefully
glad
she gets some recourse from. It's really interesting though, like, child, the ways in which Black women really really are on the bottom rung, right? Because if you remember, Doc, when that Asian doctor had his little fiasco with the airline, child,
yeah,
within a matter of days, child, he was like multimillionaire.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, you know, when Black men have had like run-ins. So I think it is very telling that this Black woman who's had a run-in seemingly has not had a recourse. They haven't even contacted her personally to apologize. So,
yeah. And it seems like it has everything to do with all those kind of gendered and racial,
oh, yeah,
you know, stereotypes around, yep, Black womanhood and yeah, Black women's embodiment.
And this is the notion that they had to have been doing something wrong. I mean, it happened with the Waffle House Black woman, that when she got into it, like, that was this immediate thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Black people think, like, Black, well, she was probably being,
yeah,
too loud.
Attitudinal,
well,
and,
yeah,
and all that. That's what I'm
that's
saying,
the
aggressive
default.
And
yeah,
all this. And although that there are stereotypes, certainly about Asian men, Black men,
yeah,
right?
Certainly.
The overwhelming stereotype
pervasive,
around,
yeah,
Black women is around them being aggressive.
Attitudinal.
Yeah. You know, having a kind of sassy, surly disposition,
yeah,
which of course is completely unfounded,
yeah,
untrue,
yeah,
and just.
And even if that was the case,
so,
it doesn't warrant somebody getting beat down or shot
so,
or any
right?
number of
it
things.
Doesn't,
so,
exactly. So,
those go without saying.
Shout
so,
out
yeah,
to
so, yes,
Amber J. Phillips,
yeah,
and we support you.
Before we go, the latest memes making its way around Black Twitter, of course.
Oh my God.
We can thank the city of Oakland, California. Wakanda forever, right? No,
yeah,
that's where
okay,
Eric Killmonger was from. He's like, I ain't from,
yes,
Wakanda. Have you seen that? Did you see that when there was a white woman interviewer who was interviewing Michael B. Jordan.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, as white people try to fit in a child, and she tried to do the Wakanda Forever salute. And he was like, have you seen the movie? He's like, I ain't from Wakanda.
He's okay.
Like, he's like, my character from Oakland.
I know.
So it was the funniest thing, y'all, if y'all have not seen it. Yes. He's like, I ain't from Wakanda. My people from Oakland. But anyway, in Oakland, I think we mentioned last week that there were some two black men in the park barbecuing. There was a white woman passerby, and mm-hmm. she, according to her calculations, they were barbecuing in the wrong area of the park. Now, there are certain areas of the park that are outlined for barbecuing. Certain areas.
For charcoal grills.
Some are for any kind of grill, including charcoal, and some, I guess, are just for gas grills. And apparently, from her calculations, these men were barbecuing in an area that was reserved for non-charcoal grills, and they had a charcoal grill. And according to her, what would happen to the children? Children may get hurt, I guess.
Yeah, and she kept using the language in the video of illegal. And it's not illegal. Okay, there's a difference between something being a park policy than something being illegal.
Against the law of the land. Yeah.
It's like,
and so, but so she calls the cops, and apparently she waits 2 hours for the police to come. And luckily, there were some other white people who were passing by who wanted to document. And I'm so glad. It really should get like some kind of Emmy Award or some kind of Oscar for the cinematography. But it was really good that the white woman passerby, another white woman, recorded this aggressive white woman. Right? Mm-hmm. She's like, why are you harassing these black dudes? I actually have a map right here. You know, they're not bothering you.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually the cops come. They're just interested, really, in being there to break up a barbecue. Mm-hmm. So then she does what?
The cops never arrive. She starts getting really frazzled by the white woman who basically started antagonizing her. She's so like, she doesn't like to be scrutinized. What does it feel like to be followed? What is it like to, you know, be under a microscope? Like, that's how you're making other people feel. So the woman, you know, goes into this convenience store. So she walks away from the scene. The cops never arrive. And then she sees an officer in the parking lot of the convenience store.
Yeah.
And basically is like, oh my God. And then she starts crying.
They were attacking me. Yeah. They were harassing me. And so anyway, she relied on the last weapon that she had, which was her white woman tears. Mm-hmm. But the funniest part was that the white man cop was so disinterested. He was so unmoved. But anyway, so all that to say that now this white woman who was really meddling, breaking up a black good time, has spawned a plethora of black Twitter memes. they take her likeness, they insert her her face and her head on her, cell phone into classic black scenarios and situations, including, for example, so what have been some of your favorites?
My favorite was
a picture of her at the March on Washington. So the iconic picture of Dr. King behind the podium, looking out onto the National Mall, and there she's on her phone, I guess, calling J. Edgar Hoover. You know, so what other ones did you enjoy?
Yeah, so there was where she's at the Soul Train, like Soul Train that used to come on TV.
Soul Train,
and black people are dancing. She's calling the cops there. She's in the window when there's a picture of Obama in the White House in the Oval Office, and she's calling the cops on him. There's one where she's in Wakanda, and she's,
Brady, she's calling the cops. You said that was one of Celia and Eddie in the field.
Yeah,
playing,
and they're like, she's like, officer, please come. They're my Mikey Dada. So you know, in Color Purple, they go, Mikey Dada, ocean, ain't no sea.
Sing it again. Oh. You sound so good when you sing, though.
You know, I can't.
No, you sounded really good that time. So the whole purpose of these memes is that really, like, the ways in which, as we mentioned last time, white people can't stand to see, well, not, again, y'all, not hashtag not all white people. Right. But in this case, this woman, the Susan, can't seem to see black people having a good time. I mean, these people are barbecuing on a nice warm day in Oakland.
Enjoying life.
And that speaks to what we talked about, the notion of Oakland, which again is the Bay Area. You got San Francisco, right? Which is traditionally the white, you know, the white, even white gay liberal city. And then you have like Oakland, which is like the black city, right? They're like sister cities. But now you have so many white people moving into Oakland and gentrifying them. Even people who've been there for generations can't afford to live there. Mm-hmm. So like, how do you come to our city? Right. And man, we barbecuing. Okay. In our park, so it was
in our good time, and that's what. So you know, because again, last week we talked about all these incidents that had happened recently in the news, which is now it's cooking. Cooking out while black, right? Moving in while black.
There were some SG Rose who had adopted a highway in, I think it was in Philadelphia or Pennsylvania somewhere. They had adopted a highway and they were cleaning up in their paraphernalia. And a cop pulled. They were in gloves. And they had trash bags. The cop pulls over and says, "What are y'all out here doing? Are y'all out here fighting?" And they're like, sir, they point us to their adopted highway sign. Sir, we're cleaning up the highway. We have one of our college paraphernalia. He's like, I need to see some IDs. I got a college trouble out here fighting. What was like a trash bag, like boxing glove mats? Like,
oh my God. So, I mean, the student at Yale, the grad student at Yale, who was sleeping in the common area in her dorm.
Yes.
And this other Yale student, white woman, called the police on her and said she didn't have the right to be there. Again, illegal. So we talked about all those kinds of incidents last week, but it really, this idea that, black ease, black relaxation, black enjoyment.
Black audacity.
Is something, and black audacity. Right? How dare you, right? Enjoy yourself cooking out. How dare you enjoy yourself dancing? How dare you go to school and sleep in the common area of the dorm you pay for? Right? So it's this idea that it's only when black people have black presence in an area that other white people designate as a white area, right? Yeah. Almost going back to the white and color drinking.
Well, even
fountains.
In our own spaces. I mean, even have where black people are in their own neighborhoods shooting ball, right? I mean, there was a case, I think, even in Louisville, where some black kids are walking to their own neighborhood, some teenage preteen boys walking sweaty, playing basketball on the cops driving through, like, let me see your walking papers. Like,
well,
even
see,
in our
I
own
mean,
neighborhoods.
But that's what's interesting to me is, again, I think that cops surveying black neighborhoods has always been a practice, has always been a thing.
Yeah.
I'm saying these kind of regular, everyday citizen white people, right? Calling cops on black people who they don't know, like we were talking about last week, black people who are strangers to them, right? They come across white strangers all the time in the park, at the dorm, right? At the Airbnb, right? But they're not calling the cops. So the thing that's unnerving these everyday white citizens is, again, black ease, black enjoyment. How dare you enjoy yourself in a space that I designate
black
as mine.
Joy. Yeah, black
as
joy.
Mine,
yeah,
black right? Joy. This is my space. This is not your hood neighborhood. This is not your black ghetto. Right? Yeah. So this is the reason, right? So they're not coming to black neighborhoods calling the cops on black people. The police is already there.
Yeah.
They're police is already standing watch, right? Where these folks are, again, going for a walk, doing everyday things.
Mundane things.
Yeah, and they are unnerved because, well, we don't see black people in this area of town. And so I need to know who you are, what you do, why are you here, and how dare you not wave to me like the white woman at the Airbnb. I mean, so it's crazy.
It is indeed. But before we go, Doc, we got to give a special shout out to our homie Duncan Cherry.
Oh, yes, Duncan.
Listeners, I won't give you all too much information, but I tell you what, I came across in the 11th hour a podcast awards ceremony. And they were, you had to submit by a certain time on a particular day, by like midnight, right? And so you had to put together, then spice together all these different this and that and say, and none of us are really available to come into the studio and do it. And so Duncan, who's a DJ here in the Louisville area, he allowed me to send him various files and he helped me piece them together so that we could submit it like 11:55 before the midnight deadline. So whether we do or don't win this particular submission, we appreciate you, Duncan, for really coming through. And also Gerald Cunanan, who had offered that whoever helps us,
I love
he
Gerald.
Said whoever helps us, he would do what for them.
The yard work,
the free landscaping.
He's
a beautiful landscape biographer, personographer.
And then when Duncan responded, other people were responding too. Like, I can't help it, and Gerald was like, "Ooh, too late."
Too late.
No.
First person gets
and,
the free
and
landscaping.
And my thing is, the thing I love about Duncan the most is his name.
I love that his name is Duncan. It reminds
name.
Me of Eagle Eye Cherry. Remember that singer from the
Cherry. Is Duncan Cherry your government name? Such an awesome name.
Yeah, it's an awesome name. So anyway, shout out to you, Duncan. We really appreciate you being a fan of the show. You've always been a supporter and come through for us when we've needed you. So we are all out of time, y'all. We will talk to you back here next week on the same channel. Doc, say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Strange Fruit is produced by Louisville Public Media. Our producer is Laura Ellis.
For more information, visit strangefruitpod.org, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Strange Fruit Pod.
The views expressed on Strange Fruit do not reflect those of LPM, its staff, or its underwriters.
Our executive producers are me, Jason Gardner.
And me, Kyla Story.
Thanks for listening.